Hello and welcome to the EV Cafe Takeaway, a podcast focused on that zero emission future that we all hope for. Every week I get joined by one of the lovely members of the team of the EV Cafe. And of course, this week I have the inimitable John Curtis, or JC, to his mates. How you doing, John?
I'm really good, but now going to have to look up inimitable blah, 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 and what that means.
I don't even know what it means. I think it's just a clever word. Ooh. It's just, you know, it means nice, good.
Ooh, I like it.
Incomparable. It's nice.
It's the nicest thing anybody's said to me all week.
All day. It was about 7 o'clock in the morning, just so that anybody knows. Anyway, but moving on to the more important element of the show, of course, it is the wonderful innovators, pioneers, and collaborators that we get to talk to. And I'm a bit impressed today. We are talking to what's often been referred to as EV royalty, Melanie Shufflebottom from ZapMap. Wonderful to have you, Melanie, or Mel, to her mates. Mel, welcome.
Thank you. Great to be here. Yeah, lovely to see your faces so early in the new year.
We don't hear that often.
Well, I was going to say, that's a phrase not often used.
I just want you to be nice to me.
We're not Piers Morgan, you know. We're a cut above. You know, we tend to be nice, but you know, ZapMap is one of those organisations that is synonymous, genuinely synonymous, with the EV industry. Now, it was 2012, I think, this whole thing kicked off. What on earth made you think of this? How did you get to be, you know, this ZapMap person and business?
Oh, yeah, well, I mean, back in the day, back in just a little bit before that, Ben Lane and I, my business partner, we had a website called nextgreencar.com. Some of you may remember it. And that was really about trying to help consumers work out what was the best environmental car to buy. And that at that point, petrol, diesel, hybrid, plug-in hybrid, a few electrics, LPG, remember that? CNG?
Oh, yes.
There's all these different powertrains. And you know, people were frankly confused. So what Ben did is he created this very clever life cycle analysis, which looked at the emissions, embodied emissions, so not just the CO2 emissions, but also just general air quality emissions embodied in the production of the car, the fuel production, and then also the tailpipe emissions. So, and then created a score from 0 to 100, applied those to all cars, and then created a website so people could sort of search and work out, you know, which was the lowest emission option. Because remember, back in the day, that was all about, are you going to get 100 grams per kilometer car, or are you going to get 150 gram per kilometer car, or am I going to get a hybrid, etc., etc.? So yeah, so that's what we did, and that was Next Green Car. And then, you know, yeah, around 2012, I think that was the Renault Zoe, BMW i3, obviously the Nissan Leaf, they came out, and you know, we went, right, this is it. Because as we know, electric cars have had a few false dawns before, but you know, we said, right, this is it. Electric cars, this is their moment. They are coming. There are mass market cars here, which is, interestingly, they were relatively cheap if you think about it at the time. But people are going to need to know where to charge their cars. How are they going to be able to find that? Let's collate what we know, created a spreadsheet, put up a nice little really simple Google map within Next Green Car, and that was ZapMap. And then over the next couple of years, it became a really important page. We were really into sort of digital optimization, SEO. It became the page to go if you wanted to find electric car charging. And then we thought, ah, we've got something, and then we sort of set it free on its own, created the brand.
So when did it become a brand then? So 2012, it sort of was the inception. When did it become a brand in its own right?
2014, so 10 year, we did a bit of a 10-year celebration last year, 10 years ago, a bit more now, nearly 11 years. Yeah, we created the website, and because we'd come from this sort of digital publishing background, we knew right from the beginning that it was really important to have, it wasn't just about a map, it was about the guides, it was about helping people, you know, navigate all these new concepts and think about, you know, how much does it cost, how long does it take to charge, etc. So it was actually first a website and a website map. Then people went, we need an app. And we're like, yeah, we need an app, but we've got no money, because we were very, very bootstrapped at the time. But eventually we cobbled together some money. We got a freelancer to create an app. I think we paid them 20 grand or something. And then we actually charged for that very first iteration of ZapMap because we thought, well, look, everyone wants this. And so the volumes were quite low. But what it did mean is that we then got enough money to do the second version, which was then free. And then the volumes just really shot up, you know, in relation to the number of cars on the road. So that was sort of the beginning, I guess.
Mel, why EV? Why does that matter to you? Because, you know, Ben could have done something completely different. Would that have tickled your fancy because it was data and it was something interesting? Or is it specifically EV and sustainability that drives you?
Yes, I mean, that's interesting. I think when back in 2010, you know, I was just a standard person, of course, interested in, you know, in the environment and doing my bit, but I wouldn't say that I was fully committed like I am now. So, you know, started on the car side and, you know, then was like, wow, this is really something. This is how we can make an impact. 20% of emissions are from cars. You know, this is the technology. It's about rolling it out. It's about giving people information. So I certainly wasn't an environmental warrior before 2010. I was just a standard person who wanted purpose. Then I was like, right, this is my purpose now. And, you know, now obviously I'm fully committed. But yeah, no, I certainly haven't been, you know, 50 years a warrior.
Have you found that you've changed? Have you found that as a result of getting interested in EV, that sustainability has become a bigger part of your life?
Totally. And now I see my friends, they go, oh my God, Mel's going to talk about electric cars. So yes, it's become, you know, much, much more important. And, you know, and I think about it in a much more a broader way now. And, you know, I think like we all do, you realize that there's so many changes that need to happen. And I feel that where I'm making the most, you know, I am focused on doing something significant or helping, you know, within the industry. We all are, aren't we, trying to make this change to that 20%. But yes, it's made me think more broadly about, you know, other stuff, just, you know, generally my life, travel, but also, you know, how often I buy things and, you know, to try and be more sustainable in general.
And do you know why that is at your core? Is it because of the kind of information that, like, as you've been working alongside of the industry, but from OEMs to charge point operators, you know, to all of these different types of companies, is it the information that you've learned, you know, around the state of the climate, the state of public health, the state of, you know, is it those things that are now driving you?
Yes, I think so. I think the more knowledge you get, the more you know, I think you move from just getting these messages, you know, we need to change, climate change, da, 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 to actually, wow, okay, this is now. And also, more importantly, I think the technology is there and it need, you know, and it's about humans making it happen, plus government, of course. It's not just about the individual. You know, I mean, obviously, government policy is incredibly important and you know, government leadership. But yes, yeah, so I think it's about becoming more informed over the years.
And that is the personification of ZapMap, isn't it? Being more informed. I mean, your maps, your guides, your tools, the vehicle analysis, you bringing everything together. It's a great resource, which I often use. You've made that resource very available to people without kind of shutting people down on that. Was there a purpose for that?
I have reflected. We always talk about, you know, the early adopters, the pioneers, now the early mass market, all of that. But when I look back, actually the same information has been needed all the way along. Yes, maybe 10 years ago, people were more prepared to do a bit more research and look into it. But then the flip side of that was there was less information. Whereas now there is so much information available, isn't there, really? And, you know, to me, although, of course, we know there's all these myths out in the industry, there is also just a massive shift that we need to help people make the change. A lot of people love their petrol and diesel cars, and they just don't see, they see it being forced on them, or they don't understand, you know, they don't understand it. And so I think we see our role as very much sort of giving drivers confidence to make that switch. So we're not right at the top of the funnel where is, shall I get an electric car or not? Where people have already thought, oh, I'd love I might like an electric car. And then they go, what about charging? So we're really trying to help them just move away from, God, oh, charging's a nightmare. You go, well, actually, you know, if you charge at home, it's very easy, and look at all these chargers out there, and here's all the different terminology. But I think as an industry, we need to accept that there is a lot of education and hand holding that's needed from the, you know, million now, 20 million by 2030. That's a lot of people to help along the way. Not 20 million, sorry, 6 million, 6 million, 6 million, 6 million, sorry, 20%, 6 million. It's a lot.
We talk a lot about data, and you have millions and millions of data points that you capture at ZapMap, and you turn that into insights that can help inform people so they can make the right decisions about what they buy, where they charge, who they use. What are the key things, Mel, that stick out from the data and those insights that might help somebody sitting at home thinking, yeah, this electric thing, not sure, might be for me? What have you learned over those 10 years or so that might help somebody say, yeah, I'm going to give that a go?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think from the consumer side, it's all about thinking through that there's just different types of charging. And that there is an awful lot of charge. Well, most people will just need this en route charging. And wow, how that has developed over the last 10 years. You know, I think that is a success story that we should all be celebrating and shouting about. You know, back in the day, there were the 50 kilowatt chargers, mainly at Nissan dealerships, in fact. And then they started being rolled out over the Ecotricity motorway services network, and then a few BP pulses, etc. And now, if you just think how many chargers there are and how many it's just developed in terms of the power, gone from the 50 kilowatts, now there's, you know, 300 kilowatts in terms of the concentration of them. So you see these amazing hubs and the facilities. And so I think that would be my main discussion I have with people when they say, what about charging? There are no chargers. You just go, well, look, go and look at the map. Go and look. You know, there's a whole different discussion if you don't have off-street parking. I get that. But in terms of the sort of average person who has got off-street parking, that is sort of the education I think that people need to do, you know, and just have the confidence just to go and, you know, it isn't that difficult. And now all of them have contactless, you know, so contactless payment, you know, and again, that wasn't a thing. And I think there's still this residue of chat about, oh, you need all these apps and you need this. On the high powered network, you really don't. You can go and you can pay your contactless. There's a different thing if you want to get rewards and you want to have loyalty, of course, using apps and, you know, aggregators such as ZapPay, there's lots of benefits. But just from the people starting out, you know, it's about saying, just have a go. It is easy. Look at all those chargers.
Yeah, because it's a bit like yellow cars. If you suddenly buy a yellow car, you see loads of yellow cars on the road. If you don't have a yellow car, you're not interested. Nobody cares. When you don't drive an EV, you don't go looking for chargers. And so there are none. But when you rely on the chargers to get you from A to B, suddenly there are tens of thousands, and I'm pretty sure you're going to hit me with the number of chargers that are in the public network right now.
73699.
There you go.
But you know, lots of those are very slow, isn't it? So it's more like 14,000 high-powered chargers.
And that's what I love about you, is you can just pull this stuff out the top of your head and you do this all the time. It doesn't matter what people ask. And I often say, you know, somebody says, oh, where will I find information on X, Y, or Z part of the industry? It's ZapMap. They know. Mm-hmm. And you are that authoritative voice in the industry, which is objective and accurate as heck. How have you managed to get the quality of data that you need to present that complete picture? Must have been a battle.
Yeah, data quality, I mean, creating, you know, the data platform and data is obviously underpins everything that we do at ZapMap. And, you know, as I said before, we started with a spreadsheet, so super basic. And now, you know, we're so far from that. We've got, you know, all these relational databases, loads of APIs, and actually, most importantly, a really, really strong sort of quality control process. We've got a team of data assistants who look at all the data as it comes in. We've got loads of, you know, loads of ways of checking the data. And I mean, you'd be amazed how many I'm now going into my data nerdery, but you know, you would be amazed at how many different ways people could interpret the OCPI standard. So there's, you know, there's a lot to do, and but you know, that's what we feel a really core part of our role is to make sure we're on top of the data, and you know, we can present it for consumers, but also for businesses, so that they can, you know, they can start to use that data to electrify, because that's all, you know, that's incredibly important as well. People, you know, charge point operators, but also lots of industries are starting to electrify, and they need data on which to base their forecasts, you know, their plans, their investment, etc.
It is vastly underestimated, isn't it? Data. I'm not a fan of data.
No.
In fact, I'm well known for saying data schmater, or I hate data, because I do. Because
Paul, I'm disappointed in you.
Regular part of my life. But the critical thing is data. Without data, we don't get the bit I love. So I recognize the link from data to what I really love and value. And what I really love and value is the insight. I'm pointing here because I have a screen here with insight from ZapMap. And without the data nerdery that you are a magician at, we can't get the wonderful insight. So I recently undertook that impossible journey, the journey from Bedfordshire up into northern Scotland, or sort of mid Scotland actually, but you know, sort of beyond Glasgow up to Oban in the Highlands, and a beautiful part of the world, 450 miles for me in a big 7-seat vehicle, which is obviously not going to be hugely efficient, but it was you know, had enough. And I did two sort of 180 mile sort of romps, if you like, in my vehicle, and charged it super quickly. And how did I know what I was going to get at the different points? Well, of course, ZapMap. You know, I went on there, I knew that if I stopped at Scotch Corner, I could get 350 kilowatt hour chargers, and you know, this would be my price. And I got all of the insight that I needed, actually, to, and then like 20 miles short of there, I could check, are there any available, you know, are they all used, or, you know, available? Yes, they're working. Because that's been one of the big challenges, isn't it? The quality of data. Mel, is it where you want it to be yet? The quality of the data that you're getting in from the charge point operators, is it giving you that availability? Is it giving you the quality, the performance of those chargers? Is it giving you everything you want, or is there more data?
Yes, I see what you mean. Yes, for consumers. I mean, I think there's a couple of things. One is obviously getting that live availability data was a critical thing as we built up the business. You know, we started off with just static data, and then we moved, and actually getting data from ChargeMaster, before they were BP Pulse, was the critical one. And then from then, people, you know, we started getting data from people. We were missing two big networks, so Podpoint and Tesla. They were sort of always these sort of annoying gaps within our data, and actually the open data regulations from the government has actually pushed that forward. So now we have Podpoint, which is great. I think another 5,000 chargers. So, you know, that's really good in terms of the breadth of data. I think in terms of the depth, I think one bit of data which wasn't an issue previously is about how much power you are actually going to get when you get to a charger. And I think that is a sort of an emerging issue in that the charge point operators are saying, you know, they do say up to 300 kilowatts. We know there's issues. It's not just how much power is being delivered, it's how much the car can take as well. And I think that's probably something we as an industry need to get better at. You know, at this moment, how much power is there going to be? Is there enough on the grid? And then I think that there's a whole wealth of data that we don't yet have, which I would love to have, which is all around the accessibility, you know, in various ways. For your beloved vans, you know, we need to know how big those bay sizes are, what's the height restrictions, and then there's all the accessibility details for, you know, people who have various additional needs, you know, all the motability type information that we need. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, those are the two areas I'd say that we need more information on. But, you know, broadly now, charge point operators because of open data, they need to, we already had the vast majority of the data, but, you know, new operators coming on, they know they need to open up that data. So, you know, there's a lot of data there. And, you know, and then, of course, the challenge is to present it in the right way and to give all the features and, you know.
Yeah, and Mel, you've touched on two things that are very close to my heart, and you've mentioned the beloved van, because of course we don't have enough physical data around the charge point itself. So as you arrive at a charge point, you know, you don't know whether you're squeezed in the regular car park. You don't know if it's a dedicated charging hub area. You don't know if there's a height restriction. So of course vans are over 2 meters, many, and some are even over 2.4 meters, which is two measures that some car parks put on those areas. And also we pull into a service station, so it's cars only in certain directions. So there's lots of challenges that we need to answer there. But one of the things that I find as a car user, I have to use a car, sadly. You know, I'd love it if I could just drive a van everywhere. I don't actually, but anyway. I know that I've made decisions based on 350 kilowatt hour chargers and turned up, and my vehicle is perfectly capable of the Ioniq 6. So for those of you who don't know, that is one of the fastest charging cars. You need an 800 volt architecture and all of this, some technical elements to it. And if I charge, and I know that all those boxes are ticked, I should get over 200 and probably near 250 kilowatts of charging speed. And yet I can pull in and just get 70 from a 350 kilowatt hour charger or 350 kilowatt charger. What do we know why that is? I mean, I know that there is some power, but should there be some sort of the average speed achieved here is, or is that not possible?
Yeah, that's interesting. I think, I mean, in terms of what we can do about it, we are not we don't have that data. We can't track exactly what the throughput is, but I like the idea of it. And certainly on the ones where people are paying via Zappay, we can see that. So I do see that as it's a nice future idea that you could, as well as the reliability, you can also add what is average, you know, reliability, busy times, and what is the average kilowatts that people get. I like that. It's a nice idea.
Because Google does that, doesn't it? You know, kind of tells you whether an area is busy or, you know, how many people are, you know, the roads, how much is on the roads at a particular time. So I'm excited about the future. Mel, we'll take this offline.
I'm really interested, Mel, in how you've developed as a leader in your time working from a startup, where you have a certain mentality and it's can do, go get, really driven, but you're able to very much be the master of your destiny. There are small teams of people who you can work with to get stuff done. As the business has scaled, I suspect your role may have changed. What have you enjoyed about that process of growing and scaling? And what presents you with challenges that you don't naturally enjoy doing but have no choice because you're now one of the industry stalwarts? You are royalty.
Well, that's definitely not true. But in terms of, it's a good, nice question, because when before Next Green Car and ZapMap, you know, I had worked both in startups and in a corporate environment. So I had, you know, I had experience of both small companies and large companies. But when it was, you know, effectively just Ben and I, you know, and a developer, we would make all the decisions. You know, we could just go, right, let's do that. And, you know, you'd say, please do that. Next day it's done, you know, kind of idea. So that's the benefit. You could just go from A to B and done. But the negative was having to do everything, you know, as two or three people you can manage, but when you're about 10 or 12 and then you're doing all the, you know, you're doing all the HR, you're doing all the admin, you're doing all the finance, you're doing, you know, obviously all the sales, everything, it is pretty exhausting. So when we got our first round of funding and we were able to, you know, employ more people, start getting processes in place, and, you know, most importantly, actually, with our second round of funding, we were able to then recruit people who had much, much more skill and experience than I had in sales, in product management, in project management, you know, all of this stuff, HR, finance, you know, to me, you know, wow, amazing. It was fantastic, to be honest. So, you know, all of a sudden you've got these experts doing this job, which you were doing in a pretty hopeless way, which was taking you an awful lot of time and causing you a lot of stress. So that is definitely the benefit of scaling up. You know, I guess the downside is you have to, I've just had done some kind of personality test, and number one is on my thing is I'm a controller. So I have to really work at that. I want to be on top of everything. Mm. And you just cannot do that. So you have to let go. So that has definitely been my biggest challenge, is to just to go, these amazing people we've hired, let them get on with it, but yet give them a little bit of leadership and direction. So, you know, I think a lot of people find that, how, you know, when you're scaling up from 2 people to 50 people, there's loads of benefits, and, you know, definitely the benefits outweigh the negatives, because, you know, we've got a fantastic team, we have fun social stuff, we, you know, we learn from each other, but the, you know, the downside is having just to let go. But, you know, I feel I've mainly done that.
You're a remarkable person in that you seem to be gifted at so much. You're creative, you see ideas. Paul's already spoken about, you know, an opportunity, and you're right on it immediately. You call yourself a data nerd, you're a good leader, you're a great communicator. Is there anything that you think, you know, I really need to develop this? You've spoken about letting go, which I think is something which all great leaders struggle with. What else? What else is there about you that you think, I really do need to get hold of that and sort it?
Oh my God, loads of things. I mean, you know, A, I definitely don't think I'm a great leader. So that's always, you know, what you've got.
We do.
You've got to sort of shift. Well,
hear the feedback. Hear the feedback, lady.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of development stuff, I mean, I think, you know, as you, now what's in our brains is what, you know, what is the next step for Zapmap? How does the industry develop? How can we make sure that we are, you know, stay relevant as it, you know, it gets bigger and there's more, you know, bigger players coming in. So I think, you know, for me personally, I'm, you know, I'm trying to be away from the detail a bit, thinking more, you know, thinking more big picture, trying to open my mind, because my natural, you know, and I'm also a little bit of, because we've come from really controlling the costs, I'm definitely someone who doesn't want to spend a single penny more than we need. So that's a bit of a challenge for me, is like, actually, you know, although we've got all these great people, it's also, we've got to keep on spending, you've got to keep on investing in, you know, your obviously your people, but also bringing in new ideas. And just accept, you know, which I do accept, that there's lots of other ideas and new ways of thinking out there. If we're to push forward, we can't do it within our current structure. We have to keep on developing and growing. Yeah. So I think that's what's sort of in my mind at the moment.
It's fascinating, Mel, because I as I've grown to know you, one, I'll say again, as John has said, you're a great leader, and you one day you're going to have to own that. You've just got to. but let's deal with that. But what I've also found and discovered, having, you know, sat and chatted on different occasions, is that you're a wonderfully empathetic individual as well. You're very human, very, you know, there's no pretension with you. It's very easy to just chat and chew the cud and come up with ideas, and you're engaging, you're passionate. And I reflect back on, you know, because data nerdery doesn't normally go hand in hand with that. And I'm reflecting back on the 13-year-old you or 14-year-old you, and I'm thinking, what advice as Mel today would you have given that 13 or 14-year-old you to really set her up for the future that you are now enjoying, you know, with Zapmap and with your role in the industry as a leader, whether you like it or not? What advice would you have given?
Yeah, I think the 13-year-old me was liked a lot of, she still liked a lot of data. She was really into sport and doing stuff, but she was you know, definitely then quite sort of ambitious and, you know, wanted to do stuff. I think in my, in I think what I would say to her is, you know, you might do lots of jobs. You may like them or not, like, you know, be feeling like you really got to achieve, which has always been a bit of a driving force for me, which I'm trying to pull away from a bit. But don't worry, at age 40, you will find your thing. So, you know, you might do loads of different stuff, and actually that's fine. You've got a whole load of building blocks. You have what then there wasn't a thing called a portfolio career, but you kind of had a portfolio career. But don't worry, things will happen. You'll have your kids, and at age 40, you'll find your thing. So I think, you know, I think I'd say to her, don't worry, you know, don't stress so much. And I don't know, I don't think I was that stressed, but I definitely had a big driver in me. And I think what I found is a lot of my contemporaries went off and did, you know, they were accountants or lawyers or doctors, and they had a very sort of structured way of learning. And actually part of me kind of wanted that as well, but in business that didn't happen. But then at the same time, I had this sort of entrepreneurial spirit that I wanted to sort of do stuff. So I was always trying to sort of manage those two elements, which is why in my sort of earlier career, I'd started in a startup, then I went to business school, you know, very structured. Then I went to a big corporate, and then I didn't hate it, but I kind of got to the end of that. Then I did a startup, you know, so I was always, you know, and I failed at a startup, and people go, oh, failure's great. It's like, well, no, it's not when you're actually failing. You feel totally crap. You feel totally crap. And yes, of course you learn stuff, but your self-esteem goes down, your morale goes down, you feel you're letting people down, you know, all of that. So I kind of got through that. So I think, you know, maybe my 13-year-old self was still pretty positive, but I think my 30-year-old self would have liked to have known that by 40, I was starting on something, or by 50, you know, by 50, you're in a place in an industry you love. And that's kind of cool, isn't it?
It very much is. And it was around my 50th that, I found my mojo. But I look back on what you're suggesting, it's not even worth reflecting on my 13-year-old self or 14-year-old. Yes,
I know,
I was in a world of pain. But it's interesting that you had this driver, this ambition. Where did that? Because are you born with it? I don't know, because I wasn't. I didn't have that. I do now. I didn't have that then. What was it that was driving you? Where did that ambition come from? I'm curious.
I mean, you know, we're always part nature and nurture. But when I look back, I think I always had a big, you know, kind of driving force in me.
A big engine.
Yeah, I think so. And when I was growing up, you were sort of put into sport, and then. Yeah, I've always been ambitious, and you know, then, yeah, I don't know. I think it's just part of who I am. I don't know.
Nice DNA to have.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. It doesn't always take you in good places. If you know, you need to sort of temper it a bit.
You've mentioned sport twice, and so I'm just gonna pull on that thread.
Right.
What sport, and do you still do it?
Yeah, interesting. Well, my whole persona when I was younger was about I'm a sporty girl, and now probably people don't consider me a sporty girl, but in my head I'm still a sporty girl. But you know, so now I used to do just whatever there was: netball, tennis. I did judo. I did all sorts of different things, and I definitely was a sporty girl. And now I do swimming, you know, I do walking, you know, that type of stuff. So I know a lot, you know, I don't play in a team, but I used to love that.
So you make time for yourself. There's a need for you to feed your soul in that way.
Yes, exactly. That, you know, where's my happy place? My happy place is definitely walking in the woods or something like that. You know, something sort of a bit of physical exercise.
Yeah. Now, Paul mentioned that you have a big engine, and having worked with a few people who do have big engines, they sometimes pick up unusual talents, skills, things that they have always wanted to do. Have you got something which is unexpected in your locker that you do or you're able to do that people wouldn't expect? And if so, what is it?
Yeah, interesting. I mean, I think I've got in my head, I've got loads of plans for things I'd like to do in, you know, when I have my more time. I mean, I think I've been saying this since I've been about 20. When I have more time, I will X, Y, and Z. And I don't really feel I have loads of time now. But I mean, I guess maybe something people wouldn't think is that I love design and sewing. So a little bit of a, you know, I like making clothes, making soft furnishing, making curtains. I'm not saying I do it a lot because I don't have a lot of time, but if I were to have a lot of time, I imagine myself in a nice studio with nice podcasts, you know, creating some stuff.
Nice podcasts. What a good idea.
I know. Yeah. All sorts of nice podcasts.
But it is fun, isn't it? Mel, thank you for today, because we've got some real insight into the human behind this powerhouse of a business and, you know, a resource for everyone and anyone. If you've not got ZapMap on your phone or as a resource on your, you know, your desktop, then you've been under a rock for way too long. I use it as a sales tool. So, sorry, a training tool. You know, whenever I'm in dealerships, right? So you'd think that the whole world of dealerships across the country, whether they be, you know, mainstream or secondhand vehicles or whatever it is, everybody should have a ZapMap on their phone just to say, you know, oh, there's no charging near where I live.
Yeah, whip it out.
What's your postcode? Yeah. Mm. Yeah. And look, there's we've done this. We did this with when John and I were training a company, and we just get a postcode and put their business postcode in the and then just put the map of all the charging that was around, and it's just become a brilliant tool. So I'm loving hearing the sort of the person behind where ZapMap came from. What do you see the future for, one, ZapMap, and two, for Mel?
Oh. Well, for me, just making clothes in my garage. No, not really. That's, you know, future. Yeah, I mean, I think we're at a moment, there's the data's there, which is great. So that, you know, the foundation is there. We've got, you know, we're about to see an explosion of more EV drivers. I mean, what were there? 44,000 new EV drivers last month. Amazing. You know, because they're all coming onto the road and that, you know, they need information. And I think what we're going to see is more end-to-end solutions. So whether that's linking up the sort of home charging with the public charging, so that's our partnership we're doing with Hive is in that area. Ooh. I think soon the discussion around there's not enough chargers will be much more around, ooh, which charger will I choose? And so I think pricing is going to become much more important in the industry. It's already important. You know, we look at our survey and cost and pricing is, you know, beginning to be right up there. People are concerned about that. So in terms of ZapMap, there's a whole load of stuff we can do there in terms of loyalty, in terms of price comparison, in terms of directing people to cheaper charging, you know, all of that type of stuff. I think there's a whole, you know, next is plug and charge. So, you know, moving away from the app side, and when the car talks to the chargers, we see a role for ZapMap within that as well. You know, there's lots I think in the future, and you know, we see ourselves as a data platform, helps drivers but also helps businesses with information and you know, on the charging, but, you know, just in energy in general. And, you know, as we know, the future is electric, and it's all about tracking those electrons and, you know, helping people access them.
That's what exactly where I wanted to go. The future is electric.
Future is electric.
I get frustrated, Mel, because there are people in our industry who say, oh, cars are easy. That's done. And I worry that that is an element of complacency, and we could potentially, if we don't have the right legislation, if we don't have the right incentives, and we don't have the right information for new drivers, we could see the progress that's been made disappear. Am I being overly pessimistic or realistic, do you think? Is there a danger?
I mean, I'm definitely an optimistic person, so I'm looking at the positive. I mean, I read an article yesterday that's saying that UK is now the leading EV country in Europe. I mean, I just think there's such an opportunity for the UK now with, you know, with the ZEV mandate legislation. I know there's, you know, there's a few questions on quite how it's going to end up, but broadly, I think they're going to stick with those, you know, 22, 28, going on to 80. I mean, so I actually think the government, there's a lot of chat in the government as well about supporting the communications campaign. I think if we get, you know, we get the ZEV mandate totally clear, so there's no uncertainty, I think is incredibly important. And then I think from a charging perspective, when you talk to people like Vicky Reid, they don't need more money, just needs to be able to implement what's already there, mm-hmm. you know, get these processes yeah. going. And, you know, there's a lot of positivity on that, on the plan, you know, the planning changes that happened. I think that's positive. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of talk about the DNOs getting their processes better. So, you know, broadly, I kind of think there's a lot of building blocks in place. I mean, to me, the big missing link is those affordable cars. But, you know, affordable smaller cars, you know, to me is a big thing. But that's not something you can just say, government, make that happen.
Speaking of the missing link, here's Paul.
Well, do you know what? It was interesting. You're saying the affordable small cars, and I agree with that. My slight fly in the ointment, and it's particularly relevant for the van community when they're taking their vans home at night and don't have charging, because the vast majority, probably, I mean, the numbers range between sort of 75 and 85% of drivers that take a van home will not have the capacity to charge at home, and therefore will be subject to the arguably very expensive charging yeah. that is available publicly. And that for me is the sort of it's a specific fly in the ointment to the difficult bit.
Agreed.
Of electrification, which is that home charging and or that's sort of not available to home charge. So that's my little fly in the ointment, and I look forward to the day where you can be optimistic about that. But we are seeing, you know, we're sponsored by AW Energy Group, who recently had 39 pence, or and still do, at their Checkley Wood wind turbine powered charging hub, which is brilliant. Yeah, so 150 kilowatt hour chargers, 39 pence a kilowatt hour, you know, or wow. kilowatt. So it's brilliant. And it's on ZapMap, of course. Yes,
wow, great. That does sound good.
But yeah, it is. It is really good. But what we would love to know, so we have a little tradition here on the EV Cafe, because every podcast needs a tradition, right? Yeah. So we have a magic Ooh. Wand. See, it's even got a little flash on it, a lightning bolt similar to the ZapMap
one. Excellent,
sort of
excellent,
like that.
On brand.
There we go. So
it's like my earrings.
On brand.
Oh,
yes, so. Absolutely. Yes, there we go. We're doing it. So we hand the magic wand to you. So I'm going to pass that through. There you go. You can grab that. That's it. Take the magic wand.
I love how people do that. How they receive
I know,
the wand
every time. So you are now empowered, Mel. How would you use? You only get one wish. I'm sorry.
One wish.
How would you use your one wish?
To what? To something in the future. Something to.
Something that aids ZapMap, aids Mel, aids the industry. How would you use that power? Lifetime supply of Smarties?
Oh,
I don't.
Yeah, that does sound good. No, but seriously, you know, I think of all the things I would like, there to be 10 models of electric cars which have at least 250 mile ranges, which are new, sub £15,000.
Wow.
So that's what I would like. I mean, I'm not saying it's possible, but that's what I would like.
But I love how specific that was.
Well, 10 more, you've got to have a bit of choice, right, haven't you? You know, so and
absolutely.
You can't just say one model. You've got to have a bit of choice. They've got to be, you know, maybe some brands that people know as well. But yeah.
Yes. Well, there you are. The industry gauntlet has been well and truly laid down for 10 models of sub £15,000 vehicles. I mean, that Yes, I'm all for it.
But maybe that's a bit of an unrealistic one. You know, maybe that's, you know, I mean, there's also more sort of policy things, but now I've gone away from my one point because I've got a whole list. But
yeah, but I think if you were to wave a magic wand, wave it for the impossible.
Yes.
For everything else, there's Mel.
Everything else. yeah, right.
Oh, dear, you can make things happen. Mel, this has been a real joy. John, any final thoughts from you?
Yeah, I just need to say yet again, Mel, that the industry and we think you are an incredible human being. And I don't know why it's so hard for you to be able to take that compliment, but you have provided genuine leadership. I've been in this industry for 14 years. And I heard of you very, very soon after I put in the network in Scotland and thought, this is going to make a real difference to people if it lasts. And the reason it's lasted is massively down to you. You are remarkable, and please hear that. There are a lot of people who wouldn't be driving electric if it wasn't for you and Ben and ZapMap.
Well, back at you guys, because you've done amazing stuff in the EV Cafe. Humour, information, bit of chutzpah in the industry. And brilliant. And it's lovely to see you guys at events. And yeah, and it's been lovely to be on the podcast with you.
You're wonderful.
And Mel, you know, I've got to echo what John said. In the sense, for me, when I first got to know you, it was through the EV Cafe that I got to know you. I think you came on early doors when we were in lockdown.
Yeah,
and I think you were in your room with your Velux window. I think it was, and so you were there, and I was like, wow, this person, wow, you know, leader, right? But out there doing something great within the industry. But what I've grown to know is this lovely person that engages with the market, is empathetic to it, and understands the challenges, and empathetic to us. You know, we it's nice. And you care about vans. You know, we always talk about vans whenever we see each other.
I love a van.
And it's great. And so, Mel, you know, genuinely, thank you for ZapMap. Thank you. It's genuinely helped me out hundreds of times and really leading the way to the future. And what more is there to say?
There is more to say. Can I just say one more thing?
There is.
As I sat here listening to you summarise that, an email popped into my box and I get a little notification and it says, news from ZapMap. ZapMap releases 2024 EV charging statistics revealing record rate of charge point installation. There were 20,000 new charge points put in last year. And that news came through as you were summarising Mel's contribution.
Hot off the press, literally.
There you go.
Anyway, so check out ZapMap if you haven't already. But listen, you've hopefully got a real insight into the wonderful leadership of Mel Shufflebotham and how this whole wonderful idea has come to market from helping people probably save tax back in the day.
Yeah,
you know,
that was
getting
a big
the
driver.
Right kind of... Yeah, and it still is today, right? Because everybody that drives an electric vehicle gets to have really low tax for now. And obviously that'll have to change over time. But it's been fantastic. I'm loving the insight that has come from the nerdy data that I'm not so much a fan of. But I love the insight that's come. And Mel, thank you. Thank you for sharing your journey with us. And with everybody. And if you've liked this podcast, which I'm sure you have, please go and check out many other podcasts on the EV Cafe page. And you can follow us on Apple and Spotify and all of that good stuff, and YouTube as well. Check out ZapMap if you haven't. Download the app. Look at the website. There's so much insight there you can get. And you can have it in your pocket all of the time and find your way about and do those journeys that everybody says is impossible. Mel, thank you.
Cheers.
Everybody, have a great day.
Bye.